This Sandwell News podcast is divided into chapters.
Welcome to the Sandwell News, due with you on Saturday the 25th of July. If you are a postal listener and a day or two earlier, if you listen on the internet or get our podcast.
Sunrise this week will be at 20 past 5, sunset at 10 past 9. On Monday, temperatures should reach 24 degrees and still no rain.
Now, at this point, we usually have the SVI activities for the week ahead, but I'm going to try something a bit different. So I thought I'd slot in a few events happening locally and elsewhere that you might want to hear about. First up, what do you know? A recording of Radio 4's Brain of Britain contest is happening in Birmingham this coming weekend. That's on Saturday and Sunday. Now, this might just be in time for our internet and podcast listeners to hear and go and book a ticket.
Hello. I hope you're well. I'm from Lost in TV. We are an audience ticket company for TV and radio shows. And at the moment, we are working on BBC Radio 4's Brain of Britain, which is recording the semi-final and the final of this year's contest in Birmingham later this month. We'd love to invite you and your members at Sandwell Talking News to come along to watch the show being recorded, taking place at the Royal Birmingham Conservatoire on Saturday 25th and Sunday 26th July. We thought this would be a great fit and a unique chance to enjoy one of the world's longest-running quiz shows live in a spectacular venue. Tickets are free and it's always a fun and interesting way to spend an evening or afternoon. BBC Radio 4's Brain of Britain reaches its climax. Hosted by Russell Davies, the UK's oldest quiz competition has been crowning the country's sharpest mind since 1953. Watch our four finest survivors battle through the semi-finals and the final of this year's contest. Their wits tested against a vast array of general knowledge questions, covering everything from Ariana Grande to Ariadne, and from baryons to baritones. Do let me know if there is interest. You can book free tickets direct, or you can pass on my email address or contact number for people to request their tickets directly with me. The Royal Birmingham Conservatoire is in the city centre and is well served by all transport links, and there is a convenient multi-storey car park next door. The Bradshaw Hall, Royal Birmingham Conservatoire, 200 Jennings Road, B47XR. Entry is reserved for all ticket holders until doors closing time each day. We don't overbook, and each recording is no more than 2 hours with an interval. Children aged 14 and above are also welcome. We hope to see lots of you there. In the meantime, please do let me know if I can help with any further information. Kind regards, James Lost in TV Audience Services, info@lostintv.com. Oh, 208-53-08-15-4. https. /lostintv.com/tv-show ?ID=1425. You do need to set up a Lost in TV account to book online, which involves entering your email address and setting up a password.
And by the way, What Do You Know was the programme's title when it started in the early 1950s on the Old Home Service. Moving on into early August, here's Sophie with an invite to the latest Wonder in Nature walk in Smethwick.
Hi, Sophie here, Wonder in Nature. Just letting you know about the next Nature Connection Through the Senses event. It's called Summertime Through the Senses and will be in West Smethwick Park. It will be a guided walk connecting with nature through the senses and playful summertime activities. We'll be thinking about taste as well, so please bring along some summer seasonal foods to share, where we'll have a picnic at the end on the picnic benches. It's on Monday the 3rd of August, West Smethwick Park, 1:30 p.m. meet at the pavilion until 4 p.m. Please contact SVI offices to register your place. I look forward to sharing nature connections with you soon.
And I might just be able to join Sophie and the Nature Wanderers on that day. Finally, we're going right back to 1966. England didn't win the World Cup and football isn't coming home. Many listeners, me included, do remember 66 when England did win the World Cup. So why not drop by Boom 66, which is Boom Radio's 1966 day, which is coming up this Thursday on a special pop-up station Boom Radio will have on that day.
Boom 66. Who can ever forget 1966? We're celebrating the 60th anniversary of England's 1966 World Cup win with a special radio station just for the day. Boom 66 will come on air just on July 30th. With a whole day of music and recollections from that great year, programmes will include a lunchtime special, hosted by former BBC broadcaster Gary Richardson, with guests including Harry Redknapp, who played with England World Cup heroes Bobby Moore, Jeff Hurst and Martin Peters. Gary will also speak to former England cricket captain Graham Gooch, who will explain how he came to play football with Bobby Moore. And he'll be joined by the great Des Lynham. And it's not just about the football. It's about the whole spirit of a remarkable year. The music, the fashion, the places, the people. Every song played on the day will be from 1966, with bonus programmes from the Boom team featuring their recollections of life in those colourful days. Graham Dean will reflect on his life as a 17-year-old and play the hits of the time, and few are better poised than David Hamilton to give his perspective. He'd already interviewed both Cliff and the Beatles and introduced them on stage. Roger Day will also embrace his love of the beautiful game, whilst also marking his 1966 radio debut on board the pirate radio station Swinging Radio England. There will also be a special programme hosted by Ron O'Quinn, who helped to create that offshore station that year, and who accompanied the Beatles on their 66 US tour. News bulletins on the day will feature the stories from 60 years ago. What do you remember of 1966? Send us an audio message now to 1966@boomradio.co.uk. Boom 66 will be available on July 30th on Alexa, on DAB Plus in London, and on the Boom Radio UK app.
I'm glad I'll be back in time to hear some of Boom 66. We'll have the usual TV audio described TV listings and radio programmes from TNF a bit later on. In the meantime, here's just a few of the headlines from last week's papers.
Some headlines from our Express and Star readings this week. In Wednesday's news, we hear Albion have signed a new striker. Thursday, another illegal goods shop closed in Cradley Heath. A bumper crop at Halfpenny Green Vineyard. On Friday, Whole Lot of Love supermural of Robert Plant features in colourful artwork. Fun returns to the beach in West Bromwich. Saturday's news. A petition to call a halt to more HMOs in Wensbury. Great Bridge Shop lotto licence removed due to missing prize money. Monday, Tipton Bar and Grill loses its licence. Black Country Radio extended DAB coverage for Walsall and nearby areas. Tuesday, bus diversions and delays on routes X10 and 80. Albion's training camp in Portugal.
And not all the headlines there as we usually list, because I've been rationed to having just a few of the more prominent articles highlighted here. So it is now on to the first day's readings from the papers, courtesy of Express and Star Publications, read by Mia.
Hi everyone, it's Mia reading some newspaper articles from the Express and Star, 15th of July. I hope everyone's been having a lovely week. The weather has sure been on our side for quite a while now, and I too am really enjoying the nice heat. I have got a little bit sunburnt, but I'll survive, I'm sure. Has anyone else got any lovely summer holiday plans? Let's begin. Baggies striker sale finalised. Albion have confirmed the sale of striker Isiosa Sule to St Mirren. The 20-year-old has returned to his native Scotland 3 years after joining the Baggies from Celtic. Sule was a regular for Albion's under-21s during his time at the Hawthorns, but made only two first team appearances, the most recent of which came in April's 0-0 draw with Millwall. He joined Motherwell on loan last season, but again saw his chances limited due to a serious thigh injury, with the Baggies having already bolstered their attacking ranks this summer, with the signings of Barney Stewart and Jimmy J. Morgan. Soleil is being allowed to make a permanent exit. St Mirren are expected to pay out a nominal fee, but the deal does include a sell-on clause. Soleil was born in Glasgow, has agreed a 2-year deal with the Scottish Premiership club. Black Country bus scheme into Second City is delayed. Shovels in ground, but delivery behind schedule, transport buses are told. A major cross-city bus project that could introduce several new routes has been hit by delays. Birmingham Council says it is working with Transport for West Midlands, TFWM, to improve public transport across the city, with this particular scheme aiming to introduce new bus lanes. The project could also bring in bus priority at junctions and improvements to stops. There are five proposed routes in development that all go through the city centre: Longbridge to Hampstead, Druids Heath to Dudley, Longbridge to Castle Vale, Bartley Green to Chelmsley Wood, and West Bromwich to Chelmsley Wood. TFWM, the transport arm of the West Midlands Combined Authority, WMCA, says the project could provide more reliable, regular and predictable journey times, help reduce traffic congestion and boost productivity. But a recent Birmingham Council report suggested the cross-city bus scheme had been hit by delays, adding there had been a slippage of £4.2 million. The project timeline has moved from 2025 to 2026 to 2027 into 2028, primarily due to dependencies on Transport for West Midlands, the report added. Progress is closely tied to Transport for West Midlands' delivery schedule, which has experienced delays. However, outline business cases for City Centre to Chelmsley Wood and City Centre to Druids Heath have now been approved. Asked about the delays, a TFWM spokesman said shovels are already in the ground in the Black Country. WMCA chairman, West Midlands Mayor Richard Parker, is moving ahead with plans to franchise the bus network. A spokesman said, "Our buses aren't working for the public. Franchising our network will mean improvements and more reliable services and the power to keep fares low." Police appeal renewed, 26 years after murder. New footage released to coincide with victim's 70th birthday. Police have renewed their appeal for information into the unsolved murder of an Oldbury man, more than a quarter of a century after he was fatally stabbed at his home. As part of the fresh appeal, officers have released previously unseen footage recorded on the day of the attack in the hope it will prompt new witnesses to come forward. It can be seen at expressandstar.co.uk. Zafar Mehdi was stabbed at his home on Basins Lane around 2 p.m. on June the 28th, 2000. He suffered a single stab wound to the chest and collapsed between the hallway and living room. He was taken to hospital by an ambulance, but died a short time later. The renewed appeal coincides with what would have been Mr. Mehdi's 70th birthday on July the 10th. A woman was charged with his murder, but was later found not guilty by a jury. Police said they respect that verdict and remain committed to identifying those responsible. Investigators are continuing to seek information about two men who were seen arriving at the property in a white car shortly before the attack. They were seen making their way to the back door of the house before leaving in the same vehicle prior to the stabbing being reported. The pair were described as black men, aged between their mid-20s and early 30s, both of medium build. One was clean-shaven with short, straight hair and was wearing a black leather jacket and dark clothing. Witnesses said he had a Jamaican accent. The second man was unshaven and wore a dark blue bandana, covering his hair along with dark clothing. He was reported to have a Brummie accent. The vehicle was described as similar to a 1989 Vauxhall Astra with a green private hire plate on the rear bumper. Mr. Mehdi's eldest daughter, Madonna, said, Losing my father was the hardest thing my family has ever gone through. We have had to endure the weight of this unsolved tragedy without justice. I plead for anyone who knows anything about the men who came to our home that day to do the right thing. Help our family get the answers we have waited so long for and bring those responsible to justice. Detective Inspector Jim Church from the Force's Homicide Review Team said officers had continued working on the case over the past 26 years. Anyone with information is asked to contact police, quoting log 3175 of June 30th. Traffic cone flies first class to Boston, a symbol of Scotland's friendship. A traffic cone intended as a symbol of friendship between Glasgow and Massachusetts has flown across the Atlantic in a first class seat. During the Tartan Army's stay in Boston during the World Cup, Scotland fans often adorned the city's statues with orange traffic cones, imitating the Glasgow tradition for the Duke of Wellington's statue. Boston took the Scotland fans' antics with good humour, and even Mayor Michelle Wu joined in by coning a statue of basketball legend Bill Russell. Now a cone covered in messages from Scotland is heading to the USA, where it will travel around Massachusetts to raise money for mental health charities. The cone features the phrase, "No Boston, no party," with illustrations celebrating both cities, including the Red Sox logo and bagpipes. It is the brainchild of Glasgow creative Andrew Dobby, who missed out on attending the World Cup, but said videos of the Tartan Army in Boston helped lift his spirits. It's Mr. Dobby who accompanied the cone on a Delta Airlines flight, and he wants it to become a symbol of joy and connection. He said, "What happened between Scotland's fans and the people of Boston was completely organic, completely joyful, and exactly the kind of story the world needs more of right now. Every time I saw videos of the Tartan Army in Boston, it lifted my spirits. It was impossible not to smile. So much of what we see online can feel heavy, but this was different. It was warm, funny, daft, and kind. The cone has become a symbol of that feeling of joy, connection, and love. We can either look back on this summer as a happy memory, or utilise it as a catalyst to build something lasting between Glasgow and Boston through culture, tourism, trade, and creativity. We want this to be more than a summer fling. The cone will be fitted with a contactless chip, allowing people to donate money to two charities, Scottish Action for Mental Health and Massachusetts Association for Mental Health."
It's Jan Lloyd reading articles from the Express and Star on the 16th of July. Man is charged with shop thefts. A man has been charged with more than 20 shop thefts after targeting stores in Tipton. West Midlands Police said Thomas Stanford, aged 46 and of no fixed address, has been charged with 21 counts of shop theft. He appeared at Wolverhampton Magistrates Court on Tuesday, July the 14th, and is next due to appear in court in August. It comes after hundreds of pounds of items were stolen from four stores in Tipton between July the 2nd and the 9th. West Midlands Police added, "Sandwell North has a dedicated retail crime team which targets prolific retail crime offenders, bringing them to justice. The team patrol hotspot areas and work with retailers and partners to keep Sandwell safe. To report any retail crime incidents, please call 101, said the police spokesman. "Illegal tobacco store is shut up," by Beverly Redmacher. A fourth shop in a town has been ordered to close as part of a crackdown aimed at tackling the sale of illegal goods. An order to close Top G's on Cradley Heath High Street was granted by magistrates. The trading standards team at Sandwell Council successfully secured a two-month closure order after officers discovered illicit tobacco products being sold from the business premises. It was the fourth shop in the town to be ordered to close following three successful applications for closure orders at other premises over the past few weeks. And it comes as a UK-wide survey reveals around a quarter of smokers now get their tobacco under the counter.
The latest action, undertaken in partnership with West Midlands Police, means that Top G's has had to cease trading and must remain closed for 2 months. Councillor Bob Jones, Cabinet Member for Environment and Enforcement at Sandwell Council, said, "Securing our fourth closure order in just a few weeks sends a clear message that Sandwell Council will not tolerate illegal activity on our high streets. We are continuing to work closely with West Midlands Police and our partners to identify businesses that are breaking the law and take robust enforcement action. We will continue using every tool available to disrupt criminal activity and hold those responsible to account." And the article is accompanied by a photograph of Top G's store with a metal shutter down and a huge police notice on the outside explaining why it is closed. Three more teens charged with murder of 18-year-old man. Three more teenagers have been charged following the death of a Smethwick teenager. West Midlands Police said that two 18-year-old men, Aman Khalil and Rehan Sadiq, along with 17-year-old boy, have been charged with murder. All three were scheduled to appear at Birmingham Magistrates Court yesterday morning. The victim, Zashan Afzal, aged 18, of Beresford Road in Smethwick, was found with serious stab wounds following disorder in the car park of Jamia Masjid off Albury Road on February the 20th. A total of 13 teenagers have now been charged with murder since Zashan's death. West Midlands Police have advised anyone who has not yet spoken to them with information about Zashan Afzal's death to call 101, quoting log number 4896 of 20th February. Hapney Green reaping the benefit of another heatwave, by Beverly Rademacher. Vineyard expecting bumper crop as changing climate shines kindly on grapes. A vineyard near Stourbridge is on track for another good year, with the summer heatwaves creating perfect conditions for another bumper harvest. The team at Hapney Green Wine Estate have their work cut out trimming and tucking in the 40,000 vines at the vineyard in Bobbington, South Staffordshire. It's a mammoth task. It's expected to help yield a fabulous crop, according to Clive Vickers, who runs the wine estate with wife Lisa and daughters Imogen and Emily. Clive said, "The vines here are very deep rooting, 80 to 100 feet. They'll fetch up all the water nutrients and minerals they need. They'll enjoy the sunshine, and they will grow and enjoy it and bring on hopefully a fantastic, high-quality, high-yielding crop. These are being trimmed and tucked in, but we've got 40,000 vines on this site, each with about 10 arms growing up through the canopy, so 400,000 arms growing at 2 to 3 inches per day in this hot weather. It's quite a workload. The manual labour to get them onto this canopy and tucked in is huge, but it's rewarding because it brings on a fabulous crop." He said the grapes produced on the 30-acre estate, which his late father Martin Vickers began planting back in the 1980s, will produce around 90,000 bottles of wine. But he added, "It's not all about the quantity. We'll limit that to make sure the quality's absolutely bang on, but the weather is doing a great job. The hot weather in recent years has also brought forward the harvest season, with picking expected to begin in a matter of weeks." Lisa said, "If it's anything like last year, our earliest ever harvest started on the 21st of August, and we've never picked in August before. 30 years ago, we were picking late October into November. Now we're picking early September, and last year we started in August. It's crazy, really, when you stop to think about it." The award-winning wine estate, which also incorporates a shop, restaurant and fishing pools, has a dedicated team of volunteer grape pickers from the local community who come in to help when the harvest season gets underway. "They're valued friends from the nearby community, and we don't take any of them for granted. Many of them have been with us since we were founded," Clive told the Express and Star last harvest season. A decision to invest in cutting-edge pressing machinery following a washout of 2024 means the estate can process nearly 1,000 tonnes of grapes each year, making its operation one of the biggest in the UK. And the accompanying photograph with the article shows Clive and his wife and daughter standing amidst the vines, which are very lush, although I think this picture was taken last year, holding bunches of very dark black grapes.
Hello, it's Rachel here, and I've got a recording for you from the 17th of July. Parcel delivery firm DPD begins new partnership with Albion. West Bromwich Albion has announced a new multi-year partnership with Black Country-founded national parcel delivery firm DPD. The company, which was founded in Smethwick in 1970 and grown to become a globally recognised brand, has been named the club's official delivery partner and back-of-shirt partner, with its logo featuring on the match jerseys of Albion men and women, as well as its academy teams. With DPD's UK headquarters located less than a mile from the Hawthorns, the announcement sees the club's long-time neighbours become partners for the very first time. Sam Jeffrey, Chief Business Officer of West Bromwich Albion, said, "DPD is one of the UK's leading brands and a business with genuine Black Country roots, so there was a natural fit from the very beginning. We both have a shared ambition to do things the right way, and from our very first conversation, it was clear how much affection for this club exists across their organisation. We are delighted to welcome them onto the shirt, and we see real scope for this partnership to grow over the coming years." Justin Pegg, CEO of DPD, which first started out delivering vinyl to Britain's high street record shops, added, "The Hawthorns is on our doorstep, so carrying the DPD name on the back of the Albion shirt means a great deal to our people, many of whom are lifelong baggies. For us, this partnership is about delivering what matters to our people, to supporters, and to the community we share."
Subway mural shows whole lot of love for rock legend. Led Zepp Star features in colourful artwork, making M5 underpass more inviting, by James Vukramovich. Work to make an M5 underpass brighter, safer and more welcoming has been completed with a vivid and unique tribute to a local star. The colourful mural, reflecting West Bromwich's heritage and depicting Led Zeppelin frontman Robert Plant, has been unveiled as part of the £65,500 scheme. National Highways worked with Walk Wheel Cycle Trust to fund the mural in a subway off Roebuck Lane, which is part of Route 5 on the National Cycle Network, to encourage more active travel for local journeys to reduce congestion, improve air quality and benefit people's health. Other improvements were made to a crossing, a shared path and lighting was updated. Sandwell Council also supported the project by removing large barriers to help make the path more accessible. Midlands-based artist Rob Fenton created the mural with the help of pupils at Holy Trinity C of E Primary School, who gave their perspective on what makes their town special, from its rich industrial past to local cultural icons. The bold artwork weaves together a series of locally significant elements, including the pavilion at Dartmouth Park, Oak House Park and Museum, and the Hawthorns Stadium, with further nods to West Bromwich Albion FC's historic crest. These references sit alongside a portrait of local legend Robert Plant and lyrics from Led Zeppelin's song Kashmir, "Let the sun beat down upon my face with stars to fill my dream," which the artist said inspired optimism and hope. Frida Rashdi, head of customer journeys at National Highways, said, "The underpass forms part of a key route in Sandwell, linking residential areas with offices and shops. In improving the area with better lighting and a new path, we have opened the route for more people to feel safe walking or cycling to their destinations. It is now more accessible and welcoming for the whole community, and will give residents a greater choice in how they travel, while showing greater pride in their local heritage and identity." Robert Plant shared his own thoughts on the mural, adding, "From a time and place of happy inspiration long ago." Artist Rob Fenton ran workshops with local school children to develop the artwork. He said, "Local pride emerged strongly through my chats with the pupils, with references to Robert Plant and Led Zeppelin, alongside architecture, industry, music, sport and nature. These conversations helped shape a visual narrative that reflects both heritage and identity, rooted in the lived experiences and observations of the young participants." Walk Wheel and Cycle Trust is custodian of the National Cycle Network and is working across the UK to improve its safety and accessibility for all abilities. Daryl Colborne, senior urban designer at the Trust, said, These improvements are a fantastic way to celebrate the musical heritage in this section of the National Cycle Network, while opening up the path to many more people on foot, wheelchair or cycle. This traffic-free path has great potential as a route for school children, commuters and local residents wanting to travel under the M5 to the other side of Sandwell, but over the years the subway had become graffitied and uninviting, which was a deterrent for many people. The new lighting, reduced barriers and colourful mural have transformed the space, making it safer and more welcoming for everyone. Sandwell Council launched its Clean Air campaign with mascot Auntie Duck to teach school children about air pollution and how it affects their health and everyday lives. Cabinet Member for Children and Families, Councillor Mona Carana, said, "It has been wonderful to see young people reflecting on the things that matter most to them. From our rich industrial past and proud manufacturing heritage to the local cultural icons, places and communities that make Sandwell unique." Along with the article is a photograph. It says, "The mural depicts Led Zeppelin frontman Modern Plant, inset, in his 1970s heyday. Photo, National Highways." The photograph shows the underpass with the colourful artwork, and inside the photograph is another photograph of Robert Plant from the 1970s. "Teacher given indefinite ban for hitting boys bare bottom" by Daniel Walton. Misconduct panel told child was slapped as punishment for urinating in ball pit. A primary school teacher who slapped a young boy's bare bottom as a form of punishment for urinating in a ball pit has been barred from teaching indefinitely. A Teachers Regulation Agency, TRA, misconduct hearing was told Sveltina Kalizan, 43, snapped when she saw one of her pupils urinating in a ball pit in the soft play area of Elm Tree Primary Academy, Wednesday, on May 3, 2024. Kalizan had been teaching at the school since September 2023 and is said to have been supervising pupils in the soft play area, alongside two colleagues. In evidence given at the hearing, a colleague reported that they were sitting behind a pupil between 1:30pm and 2pm when they spotted that a classmate, referred to as Child A, had removed his trousers and had urinated in the pit. The colleague said Kalizan approached the pupil before lifting him up and slapping him on his butt. The colleague said she slapped him on his butt and said, "What have you done?" On witnessing the slapping, another colleague then shouted out, "Lena, what are you doing?" Another witness, Witness B, noted that Kalizan had placed the child face down on her lap before slapping his bare bottom twice, with one hand with an open palm. The witness described the slap as not a light tap and stated it was a clear smack. And although it was hard to determine the extent of force behind it, she noted the slaps could be heard above the background noise. In the hearing, it was noted that Kalizan's facial expressions showed she was upset and disappointed by what Child A had done. The witness said she knew she had done something wrong as she had a remorseful look on her face. 2 days later, Kalizan acknowledged that she had done something wrong and admitted during a meeting with her bosses making physical contact. Kalizan made a partial admission in relation to the allegation, stating she tapped the child to encourage him to move and that the actions were misinterpreted by staff. She also denied that this conduct amounted to unacceptable professional conduct. Decision maker Mr. David Oatley, on behalf of the Secretary of State, said the panel found all allegations proven and that the actions amounted to unacceptable professional conduct. He said, "In light of the panel's findings against Miss Kalizan, which involved her hitting Child A on the bare bottom as a chastisement, there was clearly a strong public interest consideration in respect of the safeguarding and well-being of pupils, given the serious findings of inappropriate contact with a child." Whilst the panel noted Mrs. Kalizan's 20 years service and clean record, the panel did not have before it any evidence that Miss Kalizan demonstrated exceptionally high standards in her personal and professional conduct or had contributed significantly to the education sector. The panel took the decision to bar Miss Kalizan from teaching indefinitely. However, she may apply for the prohibition order to be set aside, but not until a 2-year period has passed. Summer fun for all at shopping centre. Commercial feature. Summer is officially here with the return of the beach to West Bromwich and a whole host of free fun that will keep the kids entertained right through the summer holidays.
New Square is bringing the holiday vibes with its very own beach, located in Cinema Square from Monday, July 20th to Sunday, August 30th, so the grown-ups can chill on the deck chairs while the kids get busy with buckets and spades, making their own sandcastle creations. There's also some extra special free events on selected days to make the summer holidays even more special. To infinity and beyond, Tuesday, August 11th, 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. Get ready to set off into the galaxy with Buzz and his friends for a free day of intergalactic excitement, including crafts, face painting, glitter tattoos and more. Crazy Golf, Friday, August 28th, 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. What says summer holidays more than a round of crazy golf with the family? Try out your best shots with 9 holes of fun and see which of you can come out on top. This event is being brought to New Square in partnership with West Bromwich Town BID. A spokesperson said, after some family time down on the beach, head over to our family-friendly fairground rides to complete the seaside feel, with a donation from each ride going to New Square's partner charity, the Albion Foundation, supporting families in need throughout the area.
Hello, this is Linda, reading from Saturday, the 18th of July's Express and Star. Petition to end alarming rise of homes in multiple occupation. A petition has been launched to stop the alarming rise of HMOs in Wednesbury. The petition, started by A.T. Ellis, has been submitted to Sandor Council. It states, "We are writing this petition out of deep concern for our neighbourhood in Churchfield Road, Wednesbury, and for the wider Wednesbury community, where we are witnessing an alarming rise in the number of houses in multiple occupation, HMOs. The increase in these properties is not simply a matter of appearance. It has become a serious issue that is having a significant negative impact on our community. The petition states residents feel family homes are being lost and the properties used for HMOs could instead be providing much needed homes for local families who are struggling to access affordable accommodation and remain within the area they call home. It adds, we call for an immediate halt to the approval of these and any other HMOs in Churchfield Road and other heavily affected residential areas of Wednesbury, and a full review of their cumulative impact needs to be undertaken. Sandwell Council was approached for comment. Leather Museum to stay in place. Cabinet members are next week set to approve keeping Warsaw Leather Museum at its current location. Documents published this week confirm what dozens of campaigners have been calling for nearly 2 years. Warsaw Council's new reform administration will approve keeping the attraction at Littleton Street West, a Grade 2 former Victorian leatherworks. The previous Conservative administration had closed the museum earlier this year and had planned to relocate it to 1-3 The Bridge in Warsaw Town Centre, which it would share with part of the Council's children's services. The building cost £768,766, including legal fees, and was expected to cost £5 to £6 million for refurbishment. During the local elections campaign, Reform UK, along with Warsaw Community Independence Group, vowed to reopen the museum at Littleton Street West. At a meeting on Wednesday, the Reform Cabinet will approve the revocation of the Tories' Cabinet decision, negotiate the surrender of the lease with Warsaw College, which was set to take over the building, and approve that the Leather Museum remain at its current location. Libraries in schools must be a legal requirement. Committee claims too many youngsters say they do not have a love of reading. It is striking that prisons are legally required to have libraries, but schools are not. MPs have said as they urge the government to put school libraries on a statutory footing. The recommendation is one of a raft of suggestions put forward by the Education Committee following its probe into reading for pleasure. It comes amid the government's National Year of Reading, which aims to tackle the decline in children and young people's enjoyment of reading, which hit a 20-year low last year. The cross-party committee also said every child in England should be issued with a library card from birth, that fun must come first, when getting children to read in the early years, and that the school curriculum should be changed to commit to developing a love of reading. MPs called school libraries powerful equalisers, adding, "It is striking that libraries are statutory requirements in prisons, but not schools. The department should extend its pledge to fund a library in every primary school, to include every secondary school, and follow this up by placing school libraries on a statutory footing." They also called for the government to restore funding for public libraries and introduce an auto-enrolment scheme through which every child is given a library card on registration of their birth. On the early years, the committee said, "Joy must lead the way," quoting former Children's Laureate Frank Cottrell Boyce, who gave evidence to the inquiry, saying, "No parent says to a child, when you've learned the offside rule, then I'll play football with you. No parent says to a child, when you've learned how to catch and gut a cod, then you can have a fish finger." Later in school life, the overloaded curriculum and heavy focus on assessment crowds out opportunities to foster the joy of reading, MP said. They highlighted particularly concern about the GCSE English literature curriculum, recommending it to be revised to include a core object of children developing a love and interest in books, and that the diversity of texts is improved. Specifically, they said that the division of literature from the British Isles should be expanded to literature in English, and the requirement for a 19th century novel should be extended to a longer period. The committee also called for more national moments to promote reading, like World Book Day, to be established, and for the Department for Education, the FE, to turn the National Year of Reading into a National Decade of Reading. Committee Chairwoman Helen Hayes called reading for pleasure a miracle medicine that improves school performance and expands children's worldview. "We should be extremely concerned that so few children currently say they enjoy reading or regularly pick up a book," she said. "We know that children from disadvantaged backgrounds or those with additional needs are less likely to develop a love of reading, but access to literature should never be a luxury. We need to start taking action as early in a child's life as possible before disadvantage is baked in." Shop's licence stripped over missing winning lotto prize. Hearing told correct amount withheld from ticket holder and CCTV footage wiped. A shop involved in a missing £920 lottery prize has been stripped of its licence. Sandwell Council revoked the licence for Best One store in Marketplace Great Bridge Tipton after owner Vincent Shanmugaraja Tamilenesan gave confusing explanations about his role over the theft of a winning lottery ticket. The shop was investigated by West Midlands Police after a staff member was accused of not handing over the correct prize to a customer. Police said the victim had been given £30 in winnings for what should have been a substantially higher prize. It was later revealed the price was £920. Licensing Committee Chair Councillor Matt Lloyd said Mr. Tamilanian had proved varying and different narratives and several different versions of what had happened, which meant the panel had no confidence in his ability to hold a licence at the 24-hour shop. During the police investigation, Mr. Tamilenson, the shop's licence holder and designated supervisor, lied to officers, saying he was not the owner of the Great Bridge shop and could not access CCTV, but changed his story when later interviewed by the same officers. CCTV footage from the shop, which should have been kept for at least a month, had been recorded over a week earlier. West Midlands Police said the missing video had hampered their investigation into the missing ticket. Sandwell Council's licensing enforcement officer said they had serious concerns about the shop and urged councillors to give serious consideration to revoking the licence. The committee had met to review the shop's licence at a hearing on June the 30th, but was forced to adjourn the meeting after a Tamil interpreter was unable to be secured for Mr. Tamilenson. The hearing was reconvened for July the 10th, where the licence was then revoked.
Hello, this is Janet reading from the Express and Star for Monday the 20th of July. Bar and Grill loses licence after a requested hearing regarding worker. A bar and grill has been stripped of its licence after employing an illegal worker. Sandal Council revoked the licence for Tiger Tavern Pub and Grill in Powys Avenue, Tipton, following a hearing carried out at the request of the Home Office. The bar and grill was fined £45,000 last year after a visit from immigration officials revealed a dishwasher had been employed with no right to work in the UK. Licensing Chair Matt Lloyd told owner and manager Gaminder Singh on July the 10th that he had failed to make any significant changes between the fateful Home Office visit last year and July's hearing, and committee had decided to revoke the licence. At the hearing on July the 10th, Mr. Singh said he had trusted his business partner to make the appropriate checks, and employing the illegal worker was the biggest mistake he'd ever made. Everyone can make a mistake. I've learned from my mistake, he said. I was fined £45,000 and I'll pay it. It's my mistake. Duncan Craig, licensing barrister representing Mr. Singh, said the illegal worker had slipped through the net and implored the panel to allow the pub to meet its licence to pay the fine. This was one employee out of a number, he said. This is not endemic. It's not part of the operation. If he doesn't have a licence, the company won't be in a position to pay off that fine, he added. The business won't be viable. Mr. Craig went on to say he has made a couple of payments and will continue to do so. A licensed restaurant that doesn't have a licence is going to struggle to operate. Councillor Paul Tromans replied that while it was only one employee that did not have the right to work in the UK, it was still 25% of the workforce, and right-to-work checks had only been carried out in June, nearly a year after the inspection by the Home Office, which resulted in the fine. Mr. Singh said he had recently begun paying off the fine, but Councillor Carl Leach criticised the pub owner for not starting sooner. Immigration enforcement officials inspected the Tipton pub in August last year and found that one member of staff did not hold the right to work in the UK. When interviewed, the member of staff who had entered the country in 2023 with a student visa said she had worked at the pub for around 3 months and was usually paid around £50 to work from 6 a.m. until 11 p.m. every Saturday to help during private parties. Black Country Radio expands its coverage. A community radio station has increased its reach across the Black Country after launching a new chapter in Warsaw. Black Country Radio and Black Country Extra have joined a new DAB multiplex, bringing a mix of music, local information and community-focused programming to thousands of new listeners across the borough. The station said that joining the multiplex, which is a bundle of digital radio stations grouped together and broadcast on a single frequency, will significantly expand its reach and make it easier than ever for audiences across Warsaw to tune in at home, in the car and on compatible smart devices. The multiplex was launched at an event held at Bescot Stadium, home of Warsaw Football Club, attended by a number of local charities and community organisations, as well as the new Mayor of Warsaw, Councillor Alan Fleming. Since its launch, Black Country Radio has built a reputation for delivering engaging presenters, carefully curated music, local news, community features and support for charities, businesses and organisations across the region. Sister station Black Country Extra is a platform for local people, community organisations and charities to curate their own radio shows and learn new skills. Families invited to travel world. Families were invited to take a whistle-stop trip around the world at a fundraising evening in Albury. The Salvation Army in Albury hosted its Around the World in 80 Minutes event on Saturday, July the 18th, with proceeds helping local young people attend the West Midlands Summer School. The family-friendly event at the Salvation Army Hall in Merton Close featured live performances from the Albury Community Choir, games and refreshments, and activities inspired by countries around the world. Money raised will help young members of the church attend the annual summer school, where they can develop their musical talents, build confidence, and make new friendships alongside young people from across the region. The Salvation Army in Albury runs a range of activities throughout the week for families. First, Aussie Day will celebrate legacy of Black Sabbath singer. The life and career of one of the great cultural icons of Birmingham will be marked with a day of celebrations. Birmingham will come together on Wednesday to celebrate the first Aussie Day, a free programme of live music, public art, special performances and shared moments celebrating the life, legacy and Birmingham roots of the Prince of Darkness, Ozzy Osbourne. Delivered by Central, BID and Opus, Outdoor Places Unusual Spaces, in partnership with Birmingham City Council, Birmingham New Street and Westside BID, BID, the day will transform locations across the city into a living tribute to the Aston-born rock legend who died aged 76 on the 22nd of July 2025. Taking place across the Birmingham city centre, visitors will be invited to explore the places that helped shape Ozzy's story, with activity at the Black Sabbath Bench and Bridge, Birmingham Museum and Art Gallery, Birmingham New Street Station, Bullring, Selfridges and Martineau Place. 1 year on from the funeral procession where Boston Brass performed, the five-piece brass band will once again bring the music of Ozzy Osbourne and Black Sabbath to the streets of Birmingham with a series of pop-up performances across the city. A special lunchtime performance by the musicians from the City of Birmingham Symphony Orchestra, the CBSO, will take place at Bullring, while visitors can capture the moment with free commemorative Polaroids alongside a specially dressed Ozzy the Bull at Birmingham New Street. Birmingham Music Archive will also be on hand at Birmingham New Street to invite fans to share their stories, memories and reflections on Ozzy's extraordinary impact on Birmingham and the world, contributing their messages to a commemorative guestbook that will become part of the day's lasting legacy. Alongside the live programme, Opus has commissioned a series of short films documenting Birmingham's tribute to one of its greatest cultural icons. Capturing specially created artistic moments, live performances and memories shared by fans across the city, the films will create a lasting record of a day that celebrates Ozzy's remarkable legacy and his lifelong connection to Birmingham. To celebrate Ozzy Day in Birmingham, a bespoke limited edition T-shirt has been produced with a triumphant Ozzy Osbourne graphic from his farewell concert Back to the Beginning. On the reverse is a unique listing of all 52 gigs he played in Birmingham throughout his career, as both a solo artist and with Black Sabbath. A limited number of T-shirts can be purchased at Selfridges Bullring from July the 22nd, while stocks last.
Hello, this is Trevor reading articles from the Express and Star from Tuesday the 21st of July. Bus diversions due to roadworks. Bus passengers have been warned to expect diversions on two services due to roadworks in parts of Sandwell. National Express West Midlands has put out the messages to say that the X10 and 80 services would be affected by closures for gasworks in Cradley Heath and broadband connection works in Smethwick. For the X10 service, a spokesman for National Express West Midlands said, from Monday, July the 20th to Monday, August the 31st, Hales Owen Road in Cradley Hills will be closed between Hill Passage to Heathfield Way due to gas works. During this time, service X10 will be diverted. For the 80 service, a spokesman said, from July the 22nd to July the 23rd, Windmill Lane in Smethwick will be closed in one direction to facilitate Virgin Media connection works. The 80 to Birmingham will be diverted along Messenger Road, Windmill Lane, Grove Lane, Cape Hill and Shyland Road. MPs, Council taking away kids' meals. This article is by Mark Andrews. MPs have accused the new reform-led administration of Sandwell Council of taking away children's lunches after it ended a scheme to provide free food vouchers over the summer holidays. Sandwell Council's cabinet agreed to end the vouchers worth £50 to children on free school meals over the summer, saying it would instead channel the funds into discretionary payments to families suffering specific emergencies, as well as wider support to organisations such as food banks. The move has come under attack from Sandwell's four Labour MPs. Antonia Bantz, Sarah Coombs, Alex Ballinger and Gurinder Singh Goshen said the council was taking away direct practical support from some of the poorest families in Sandwell at a time when they were facing additional pressure. During the school holidays, low-income families have to meet the extra cost of lunches that would otherwise have been provided during the school day. They write in a letter to council leader Ray Nock. For many households, this is the difference between getting through the week and being pushed further into hardship. But Councillor Nock demanded an apology, accusing the MPs of scaremongering, saying he was not cutting funding. He said all the money allocated by government would go towards alleviating hardship. Councillor Nock said payments of up to £50 would be made available to anyone who was struggling at any time, not just families whose children receive benefit-related free school meals. He said hard-up families would be eligible for up to three £50 payments in a 12-month period, and the council would be setting aside £2 million on resilience projects to help families avoid welfare dependency. Miss Bantz, MP for Tipton and Wensbury, said the vouchers provided much-needed support for families struggling with the cost of living. Children don't stop needing lunch when term ends, she said. For families already struggling to get by, holiday food vouchers are practical support at a time when household budgets are under real pressure. Reform councillors promised to stand up for the local people and help with the cost of living. Taking this support away would make life harder for the very families they claimed they would help, she added. The good, bad and ugly as Spain rule the world again. The World Cup came to an end on Sunday evening with Spain securing their second men's title with a 1-0 victory over Argentina. Here we assess how the tournament went. Spain, the European champions, are now world champions and fully deserved it after imposing their possession game on the opponents. They conceded just once in the entire tournament, with Pau Cubarsí and Marc Cucurella especially outstanding in defence and Rodri marshalling the midfield. The team do possesses a bona fide superstar in Lamine Yamal, but the fact they triumphed without him fully firing indicates what a true team effort this was. England and Scotland fans, neither team will fear that they achieved what they wanted to on the pitch in North America, but their fans were a credit to them throughout. Scotland fans drew admiration from the city of Boston and parted in the sunshine in Miami, while England supporters garnished praise from the UK's football policing chief for their exemplary behaviour. Cape Verde, or the so-called smaller nations, had their moments, such as Curaçao claiming a first World Cup point against Ecuador. But Cape Verde were arguably the most refreshing story of the tournament. They came through a tough group stage unbeaten, including briefly the only team to take points off Spain, and pushed Argentina all the way in the last 32. Hydration breaks. Clearly water breaks were required at some of the matches where heat and humidity were high. But the decision to push them out across all games, even those in air-conditioned stadiums, made this look for all the world as though it had more to do with commercial interests than player welfare concerns. The breaks effectively split matches into four quarters rather than halves, and often prove pivotal in shifting momentum. An early example being Curaçao losing their path after grabbing an equaliser against Germany. Half-time show. Coming in at almost 27 and a half minutes, the World Cup final interval cannot be blamed for the poor spectacle on the pitch in New Jersey. But it certainly did not help. The show itself, featuring stars such as Madonna, Shakira and Justin Bieber, lasted 11 minutes. But BBC pundit Wayne Rooney perhaps spoke for many when he said, "I thought it was crap. Football laws permit a half-time break lasting a maximum of 15 minutes. But its law-making body, the International Football Association Board, says it will not comment on FIFA's breach." The ugly. The Balogun affair. United States President Donald Trump had kept a low profile in the opening weeks of the tournament. Then all that changed after it was announced that a one-match ban due to be served by US striker Folarin Balogun in the last 16 match against Belgium had been suspended by FIFA's disciplinary committee. President Trump revealed the part he played, saying he had called his FIFA counterpart Gianni Infantino asking him for review of the red card. The suspension of the ban has brought into question the independence of FIFA's administration, with no explanation having been provided as to why the disciplinary committee came to its decision. The Belgian Federation is understood to still be considering its legal options over the affair, so there may be yet more to come. Argentina. Initial goodwill towards the team and its star man Lionel Messi began to evaporate after they benefited from an astonishing VAR call in a 3-2 comeback victory over Egypt in the last 16, and a controversial red card for Switzerland striker Brill Embolo in the quarter-final, under a new interpretation of the mistaken identity protocol. A series of rough challenges went unpunished in the first half of the semi-final against England, and it remains to be seen if the team will face any sanction for displaying a banner claiming Argentina's sovereignty over the Falkland Islands in the post-match celebrations. The spoiling tactics continued into the final, with Enzo Fernandez red-carded and midfielder Leandro Paredes lashing out at opponents at the end. Who and what caught the eye at Albion's training camp? This article is by Lewis Cox. Albion are back at work on home soil after a very worthwhile week in the Algarve. Here's what stood out from our time on the tour. Price looks purposeful. Albion's Northern Ireland international had a curious first full season at the club last time round, but with 9 goals and 4 assists in all competitions, there can be no doubting he had made an impact. It gets forgotten at times, but Price only turns 23 in September, and there has to be optimism he will continue to develop and flourish from his growing experience. The attacker looked strong in Albion's training camp. He caught the eye in the training session open to the Express and Star on Thursday and converted some fine strikes. He was central to the Baggies attacking in Friday's 4-1 win over Bromley, from the left where he spent the end of last season under James Morrison. He was involved in both goals and looked a cut above. It had emerged Albion's forgotten man Tam Abani had been on the comeback trail since the end of last season due to an injury picked up on the final day of last season at Sheffield Wednesday. There is a decent chance that blow cost the attacker a place in the World Cup with Jordan. Abani had 8 substitute appearances in 18 months since his $3.3 million move. He's on the verge of joining in full training, which is a shred of encouragement, but he needs a run of full training to give him hope of seeing any action. Eye-catching coaches. My big takeaway from the trip was the safe hands the squad is in at the training ground. Morrison's assistant, Matt Gill, was such a key recruit in May, but the department has been boosted further still with the additions of Gavin Strachan and Tony McMahon. Strachan, in particular, is a seasoned coach and extremely well regarded. All the noise from the club is the optimism of at Gill and Strachan leading the way in sessions with some intensity and enthusiasm. Morrison is still involved but takes more of a watching brief. The duo certainly came across like they had the command and respect of all involved. Morgan leading the way. There is excitement going around about Jimmy J. Morgan, and it is about easy to see why. The recruit from Chelsea has earned rave reviews from staff in training for his cool finishing and intelligence in linking play. He scored a penalty behind closed doors the previous weekend and gave fans an exciting first glimpse in Albufeira. His top corner finish was that of a seasoned striker, but there is clearly a lot to the 20-year-old's game. He looks like he wants to drift around and make things happen. More recruits are needed, but he looks the part. Formation needs width. Morrison was not shy in talking afterwards about Albion's need to add wide players, and it's painfully obvious. The injured Mikey Johnson is the Baggies' only natural option at this point, and his return does not seem imminent. Albion played 4-4-2 against Bromley, again no surprise, the shape that inspired survival under Morrison. But the system requires options on either flank, and we will have to reserve judgment on the head coach's options until such additions arrive. Standout youngsters. No shortage of Albion's youngsters, 12 in total, have the experience away on tour with the 28-man squad. It is understood midfielder Cole Deeming has returned in excellent shape for the new campaign. The loan at Cheltenham last season did him the world of good. Harry Whitwell did himself no harm with the start and 60 minutes against Bromley. He was in an unfavoured right-wing position but was persistent in his efforts to be positive. Credit too to Jack Bray for his goal from the bench, a cool finish set up by Suleiman Mandi's fine pass. Ollie Bostock also grabbed and assist.
Hello, it's Roger, and another 10-question quiz. OK, question one. Where are the Scottish Highland Games traditionally staged? Question two. Which famous London building stood from 1854 until 1936 when it was destroyed by fire? Question three. This is an odd one. What are rum, muck and aig? I think it's pronounced, it's E-I-double-G. What are they? Question four, casting your mind back some time. Which royal served on the ship HMS Cornwallis in World War II? Question five, still on the military world. What sort of thing is a Challenger 2? Question six. Which stadium is home to English Rugby Union, and these days the odd pop concert? Question seven. What's the name of the Prime Minister's country residence? Question eight. Which city in England has a shopping area called the Bull Ring? The Bull Ring. Question nine. What was the date of D-Day in 1944? 1944. And finally, question ten. This sounds harder than it is. That's all I can say about this. What is the time and relative dimension in space better known as? Roger, back with our quiz relating to 10 questions. First of all, where are the Scottish Highland Games staged? That's in Braemar. Braemar. Question two. Which famous London building stood from 1854 until 1936? So not one of those destroyed in World War II. It was destroyed by fire in 1936, and that was the Crystal Palace. The Crystal Palace. Question three. Muck, egg, and rum are Scottish islands. They are Scottish islands. Question four. Which royal served during World War II on HMS Cornwallis? That was Prince Philip. Prince Philip. Question 5. A Challenger 2 is a tank. A tank. Question 6. Twickenham. Twickers is the home of English Rugby Union. Question 7. The Prime Minister's country residence is Chequers. Question 8. The city with a central shopping area known as the Bullring is Birmingham. Birmingham. Question 9. What's the date of D-Day? Or what was the date of D-Day back in 1944? That was June the 6th. June the 6th. And finally, the intriguing one, question 10. What is the time and relative dimension in space, better known as? Well, if you take the initial letters, it spells out Doctor Who's transport, the TARDIS. The TARDIS. Hope you enjoyed that. We'll be back another time with another quiz. Bye-bye.
TNS Soundings.
That recording was courtesy Sarah Ann and Pedro, who head up the SVI Rocks sessions.
We must now be clear about how your information is used and the steps we take to ensure it is secure. When you asked to receive recordings produced by the Sandwell Talking News, you gave your name and address so that we could send you our memory sticks or CDs. This information is stored in a secure database, and address labels are also stored in a secure location. Having left our premises, the address labels and postal wallets are then under the protection and care of Royal Mail. Your contact details are only used for sending you our memory sticks or CDs, and will never be forwarded to a third party. If you ask us to stop sending the Sandwell Talking News to you, your contact details will be deleted from our database and your address labels will be permanently destroyed. We promise and assure you that we take data protection seriously and make every effort to meet the requirements of the Data Protection Act. If your circumstances do change, you move home, change your phone number, or wish to unsubscribe to the Sandwell Talking News, please call the office on 0121 525 4810 or email sandwelltn@gmail.com so that we can make the necessary changes.
Some audio described TV programmes for the next week along with radio programme highlights from Talking News Federation. Search for publications TNF Soundings to hear these directly on their website.
TNF Soundings.
Hello, this is Demi welcoming you to your audio described TV programmes for the week starting Saturday the 25th and ending Friday the 31st of July. And thanks to Christine who has written this week. So starting with Saturday, film buffs have a great Saturday in store with movie choices throughout the afternoon and evening, but the day starts with the usual Channel 4 American Sitcom Fest from 6 a.m. through to 12:35. The first of the film choices is at 7 a.m. on ITV, Sean Connery as Bond in Diamonds Are Forever. Then at 12, Prue Leith welcomes Alison Hammond to her Cotswold kitchen on ITV, while BBC Two has The Great British Sewing Bee. The classic 1940s romantic drama Casablanca is on BBC Two at 2:50 p.m. Comedy with Night at the Museum on BBC One at 3:50 and fantasy adventure Nanny McPhee at 4:05 p.m. Into the evening, and Jamie Cullum is the guest star in episode 2 of The Piano on Channel 4 at 6:30. ITV has a Deal or No Deal celebrity special at 7, and BBC Two continues Chris Packham's story of evolution at 7:30. Your evening film options are motor racing drama Gran Turismo at 9, mystery thriller The Infernal Machine at 11:40, both on Channel 4, and over on BBC One, the epic Gladiator at 10:20. But if that's not for you, there's BBC One's Casualty at 9:10 p.m. and the start of a new series on ITV, The Staircase, a US true crime about a woman found dead after reportedly falling down a flight of stairs, but the police soon focus their attention on her husband. You have two episodes from 9:15 p.m. Now on to Sunday. The American comedy sitcoms run from 5:55 a.m. to 10 a.m. on Channel 4, while over on BBC One, you can travel the North Wales Pilgrim's Way in Pilgrimage at 10:30 a.m. and visit Long Marston in Warwickshire for Bargain Hunt at 12:15. Fern Britton's Inside the Vets is at 11:30 a.m. Tom Kerridge Cooks Italy at 12:30. Love Your Garden is at 1 p.m. and Deal or No Deal Celebrity Special at 2:10 p.m. all on ITV, while over on BBC One there is an appeal on behalf of Tourette's Action in Lifeline at 1:55, followed by The Mating Game at 2:05. You have two afternoon film options, fantasy comedy Doolittle at 3:05 on BBC One and Roger Moore
as James Bond in Live and Let Die at 3:10 on ITV. Alternatively, you might enjoy Our Farm Next Door at 3:55 p.m, followed by Britain's Favourite Railways at 5, both on Channel 4. Or Homes Under the Hammer at 4:35 and Celebrity Escape to the Country at 6, both on BBC One. A new documentary, Force of Nature, examines how life on Earth is impacted by the sun. The series starts on ITV at 7 p.m. At 9, acclaimed jazz artist Hiromi is the star guest on Channel 4's The Piano. It's the penultimate episode of ITV's The Dark. And a new series starts on BBC One, The Rapture, a psychological thriller based on the best-selling novel by Liz Jensen. There are 4 films to conclude your evening choices. The Forgiven at 10 on Channel 4. Taxi Driver, also at 10, and The Elephant Man at 11:50, both on BBC Two. And I Am Legend on 10:30, BBC One. While ITV examines the 2006 plot by terrorists to smuggle liquid explosives onto transatlantic airliners in Terror in the Skies at 10:20. Now, for the programmes which are on at the same time, same channel, each weekday. In the mornings, Channel 4 has episodes of Everybody Loves Raymond from 7:45 a.m. and Frasier from 9:10 a.m. While over on BBC One, there is Animal Park at 9:30 a.m. In the afternoons, Channel 4 gives you Find It, Fix It, Flog It at 12:10, Narrow Escapes at 4, Chateau DIY at 5, and American Pickers at 6. While on BBC Two, you can join the Hairy Bikers Bakecation at 2:45 and Earth from Space at 4:15. With BBC One following The Travelling Auctioneers at 4:30. Then it's the regular soap slots, EastEnders, 7:30 on BBC One every weeknight except Friday, Emmerdale at 8 o'clock, Coronation Street at 8:30 on ITV. Now for Monday. BBC One's Homes Under the Hammer is at 11:15 a.m. and ITV's Dickinson's Real Deal is at 2. Then it's into the evening with Just One Thing at 6:30 on BBC Two, which examines how borrowing a pet could reduce your blood pressure. Fletcher's Family Farm continues on BBC Two at 7:30, and the series Dover 24/7, Britain's busiest port, on Channel 4 at 8. At 9, you have 4 continuing series to choose from. BBC One's The Rapture, BBC Two's Evolution, Channel 4's 24 Hours in A&E, and the final episode of ITV's The Dark. Mortimer and Whitehouse visit the Lake District in Gone Fishing on BBC Two at 10, and there are more Secret Lives of Gypsy Wives on Channel 4, also at 10. Actor Toby Jones explores his family history in Who Do You Think You Are? At 10:40 on BBC One, and the case of American influencer Alexis Sharkey is examined in Murder Gone Viral at 10:45 on ITV. You've 2 evening film choices, Hope and Glory on BBC Two at 11:05 and the Alan Bennett classic The Lady in the Van on BBC One at 11:40, while ITV continues its Love and Death series at 11:40. On to Tuesday now, you can visit the Carmarthen Antiques and Flea Market in Wales for BBC One's Bargain Hunt at 12:15 p.m. Then your evening choices start with BBC Two's Just One Thing at 6:30 p.m. with Zoe Ball prescribing 10 minutes of sunshine a day for a man with a history of heart attacks. Still on BBC Two, you have Rick Stein's Food Stories at 7 with Rick discovering the history behind the Yorkshire pudding, followed by Amazing Hotels at 8, this episode taking you to the Six Senses Hotel in Ibiza.
Also at 8, there's The Great British Sewing Bee on BBC One and the start of a new series on Channel 4, Hotel Chocolat Unwrapped, which takes you behind the scenes at one of Britain's biggest independent chocolate brands. Two new series start at 9 on BBC Two, The Vampire Lestat, Interview with the Vampire, which is based on the novels by Anne Rice, and on ITV, Cold Case Forensics, The Death of God's Banker, a documentary exploring the casebook of forensic scientist Dr. Angela Gallup. Also at 9, on BBC One, the series Murder 24/7 continues, and on Channel 4, it's The Undeclared War, followed by Gogglebox at 10 and First Dates at 11.05. You also have a film choice, action comedy Bad Boys at 10.45 on ITV. Next, your programmes for Wednesday. Terrace properties in Yorkshire, Cheshire and the Midlands feature in Homes Under the Hammer at 11.15am on BBC One. Then your evening choices start at 6.30 with BBC Two's Just One Thing. Roman Kemp discovers how a nightly hot bath could aid sleep and reduce the risk of heart disease. At 8 o'clock, you can choose between BBC One's The Repair Shop, BBC Two's Saving Lives at Sea, or the start of a new series on Channel 4, Extraordinary Extensions, which follows British homeowners as they embark on ambitious home extension projects. Lucy Worsley investigates the gunpowder plot on BBC Two at 9, while Murder 24/7 continues on BBC One and The Undeclared War on Channel 4. At 10, you've 24 Hours in A&E on Channel 4 and Inside Number 9 on BBC Two, followed by Uncanny at 11. You also have an evening film choice, Roger Moore as Bond in Live and Let Die at 10.45 on ITV. And so to Thursday. Can dark chocolate lower the risk of diabetes and boost our brains? Find out in Just One Thing at 6.30 on BBC Two, which is followed by Escape to the Country at 7 and Digging for Britain at 8. Over on ITV, Tom Kerridge cooks Italy at 7.30 and at 8 o'clock, you have Fake or Fortune on BBC One, which features a landscape believed to be by French artist André de Rain, which, if authenticated, could be worth hundreds of thousands of pounds. Also at 8, Renovation Rescue returns to Channel 4, with the team coming to the aid of families who have had bad experiences with builders, followed by Murder Case, The Digital Detectives at 9, and all three episodes of Don't Date Brandon from 10 into the early hours, a true crime documentary about two women's experiences with the same man. Meanwhile, on BBC One, Dame Harriet Walter uncovers her mother's secret role in Allied intelligence during the Second World War in Who Do You Think You Are? The chase around the world continues on ITV and it's the second episode of The Devil in the Family, The Fall of Ruby Frank on BBC Two, all at 9 o'clock. Your evening choices conclude with two episodes of Murder 24/7 from 10.40pm. And finally, Friday. In the afternoon, you have The Hairdresser Mysteries at 2 o'clock on BBC One and Hippos, Africa's River Giants at 4.15 on BBC Two. Clive Meary learns about the life-enhancing benefits of press-ups in BBC Two's Just One Thing at 6.30, and Durham's Easington Colliery Band prepares for a concert to mark the 75th anniversary of one of the region's worst pit disasters in Our Lives at 7.30, followed by the Granite Harbour series at 8, both on BBC One. Also at 8, it's Surgery Secrets of the Super Rich on Channel 4. And at 9, you've Bergerac on BBC 2 and two episodes of The Twisted Tale of Amanda Knox on ITV. The comedy series Anne Droid continues at 9.30. The final two episodes of Austin from 10.40 and the Oscar-winning drama Scent of a Woman at 11.35, all on BBC 1.
and Chef Michael Rue hosts a masterclass for Inside the Langham, Britain's first grand hotel, at 11:55 on ITV. Well, that's it for this week. We hope you find plenty of programmes to enjoy, and we look forward to updating you again next week. Bye for now.
Here are the radio listings for the 7 days beginning Saturday the 25th of July, compiled by Wendy and read by Gilly. Starting with Saturday the 25th of July, and a reminder that the BBC Proms are in full swing and can be heard on Radio 3 at various times each day. On Saturday, there are proms at 2 p.m, 4 p.m. and 7:30 p.m. They continue throughout the week, mostly at 7 p.m. There's a celebration of a comedy classic paying tribute to Some Mothers Do Have 'Em on Radio 4 Extra at 3 p.m. and 9 p.m. A collection of 5 Victorian love stories by authors including Oscar Wilde is on Radio 4 Extra at 7:30 a.m, 12:30 p.m. and 6:30 p.m. Then, from Archive on 4, comes The People's Pool, exploring the story of the Govanhill Baths in Glasgow, on Radio 4 at 8 p.m. Moving on to Sunday the 26th of July. The castaway in Desert Island Discs is legendary cinematographer Sir Roger Deakins. It's on Radio 4 at 10 a.m. While Desert Island Discs Revisited features the Olympic rower Catherine Granger, on Radio 4 Extra at 6 a.m, 11 a.m. and 5 p.m. A new 17-part series of the nationwide general knowledge quiz Brain of Britain starts today on Radio 4 at 4:30 p.m. News from Nowhere is an adaptation of the 1890 novel by William Morris, his utopian vision of a future England which has left industrialisation behind. Radio 4 Extra at 6:30 p.m. In Unreliable Narrator, a violent assault during his teenage years erased nearly all of Stephen McCall's memories. Charting his journey back to hope and happiness, he reveals how he has had to piece together the story of his life, on Radio 4 at 7:15 p.m. And from Our Own Correspondent is on Radio 4 at 9:30 p.m. Turning now to those programmes which are broadcast at the same time every day, from Monday to Friday. In The Time of My Life, we meet retired professionals spending their senior years in care homes that cater for specific trades, on Radio 4 Extra at 9:30 a.m. every day this week. There are stories featuring the gentleman thief Raffles, on Radio 4 Extra at 6 a.m, 11 a.m. and 5 p.m, Monday to Friday. The book of the week is Confessions of a Performative Male, in which the author, Darren McGarvey, asks probing questions about masculinity, on Radio 4 at 11:45 a.m. each day this week. Small Island is a dramatisation in 15 parts of Andrea Levy's 2004 novel exploring empire, prejudice, war and love in Jamaica, England, America and India. It's on Radio 4 Extra every day this week and beyond at 8:45 a.m, 1:45 p.m. and 7:45 p.m. Patricia Hodge reads an adaptation of E. Nesbitt's fantasy novel The Phoenix and the Carpet on Radio 4 Extra at 3:45 p.m. and 9:45 p.m. Monday to Friday. The composer of the week is London-born composer Alice Mary Smith, 1839 to 1884, on Radio 3 at 4 p.m. every day this week. The book at bedtime, Wild Dark Shore, continues on Radio 4 at 10:45 p.m. Monday to Friday. Now, some individual programmes to listen to through the week, starting with Monday the 27th of July. How Did We Get Here? No World Order starts a new series exploring the background to current conflicts on Radio 4 at 9:30 a.m. The conversation brings us a discussion on the different strengths of men and women on BBC World Service at 1:30 p.m. Gertrude Stein and the Liberation Fruitcake, described as a kitchen monologue by Patricia Hanna. Sounds intriguing. It's on Radio 4 Extra at 3 p.m. and 9 p.m. For fans of the panel show, there's an episode of The Kitchen Cabinet on Radio 4 at 4:30 p.m. While Just a Minute, hosted by Sue Perkins, continues on Radio 4 at 6:30 p.m. Some suggestions for Tuesday the 28th of July. In Invisible Hands, The American Century, David Dimbleby charts how, in the middle of the 20th century, America became a superpower and began to shape the world around it. This new six-part series begins on Radio 4 at 9 a.m. and is repeated tomorrow at 9 p.m. In A Fork in the Road, BBC correspondent Gary O'Donoghue reports on a sheep farm situated in the middle of the M62 on Radio 4 Extra at 10:30 a.m. and 4:30 p.m. Lucy Worsley's latest series, Lady on Trial, today brings us the story of protester Connie Bolam, who during the Second World War became the first woman to be sent to prison as a conscientious objector. It's on Radio 4 at 3 p.m. Jamaica, Shaken, Not Broken, explores the impact of last October's Hurricane Melissa, which devastated many of Jamaica's 1,600 places of worship, and follows the efforts of volunteers to salvage their sacred spaces. It's on Radio 4 at 3:30 p.m. In Touch brings us news, views and information for people who are blind or partially sighted, presented as usual by Peter White on Radio 4 at 8:40 p.m. Moving on to Wednesday the 29th of July, The Missing Hancocks brings us another recreation of a lost classic on Radio 4 Extra at 7:30 a.m, 12:30 p.m. and 6:30 p.m. In the series United Kingdoms from 2021, writers reflect life across the UK. Today's programme explores the idea of shelter on Radio 4 at 2:15 p.m. Choral Evensong comes from Gloucester Cathedral during the Three Choirs Festival on Radio 3 at 3 p.m. In Map of the Moon, Siddharth Gajuria examines how people perceive the moon. Starting with some of the earliest lunar maps, he works with moonlight to illuminate thornier questions about our own behaviour on Earth on Radio 4 at 3:30 p.m. To round off the evening, actor and folk music fan Michael Sheen sits in for Mark Radcliffe on The Folk Show on Radio 2 at 9 p.m. Moving on to Thursday the 30th of July, Natalie Haynes stands up for the classics, begins a new seven-part series with Alexandria, the Science, revealing the creativity and breadth of the scientific inventions made in that ancient city on Radio 4 at 9 a.m. In Art That Conquered the World, James Fox examines Vermeer's Girl with a Pearl Earring, asking why it has become so dominant while other masterpieces by the Dutch artist are now less well known. Radio 4 at 9:30 a.m. In a programme from 2002 in the series Great Lives, the subject is jazz giant Louis Armstrong on Radio 4 Extra at 10 a.m. and 4 p.m. Year Tides, Lunusa, is a drama infusing storytelling and song and inspired by the myths and rituals surrounding this pagan harvest festival on Radio 4 at 2:15 p.m. In This Natural Life, this week, nature writer Patrick Barkham takes Martha Kearney on a butterfly-spotting trip in Foxley Wood, Norfolk's largest ancient woodland, on Radio 4 at 3 p.m. BBC Inside Science is on Radio 4 at 4:30 p.m. And James Marriott and a guest share their thoughts on a topical issue in Radical on Radio 4 at 11 p.m. And finally, to Friday the 31st of July, the series Soul Music this week looks at Louis Armstrong's What a Wonderful World on Radio 4 Extra at 10 a.m. Classical Live brings us some highlights from this week's Proms, last month's Alborough Festival and more on Radio 3 at 1 p.m. Living on the Edge today meets the Warden at the Bird Observatory on Spurn Point in the East Riding of Yorkshire on Radio 4 at 2:45 p.m. Gardener's Question Time answers listeners' questions on Radio 4 at 3 p.m. Enjoy your listening week.
TNS Soundings.
Coming up now, we have the second part of Louise Collip's session with us. She's from the Pocklington Trust Sight Loss Council, and you'll hear some of the concerns that were talked about in this second instalment.
I'm Lou Connor, and I work for a charity called Thomas Pocklington Trust. We're a charity and an organisation. Our aim is to try and help to break down barriers, raise awareness of the struggles and the challenges that we have as blind and partially sighted people. We're very thankful that you've allowed us to come and join yourselves today. Like, sometimes there are people who are blind and partially sighted with our communities whose voices never get heard, and they don't want to be involved in advocacy work, they don't want to be involved in campaigning. They're quite happy just plodding along, doing whatever it is that people want to do. But we want to make sure we're not missing their voices, and is there something that maybe we're not focusing on as an organisation that we could do?
Hi everybody, I'm Claire, and I am a sort of lapsed member of SVI, and I'm here today just to represent the Sight Loss Councils. We're a group of people who like to do advocacy work and campaign for things that will make a difference in the lives of people like us who are visually impaired.
Fine, if we go round.
Hello, to my right is my mum, Margaret.
Hello, Margaret.
So I'm severely sight impaired. My mum is partially sighted. To my left is my wife, Rachel.
Hello, Rachel.
Who looks after us. So she's...
She's a good egg.
Yes. So I'm quite lucky in that since myself and Rachel took early retirement, we go everywhere together.
Okay.
So in terms of accessing buses and things, thankfully at the moment that hasn't come to me because Rachel drives me everywhere. I'm quite lucky in that respect.
Chauffeur driven.
Indeed. The two things that I find quite frustrating is that everybody these days expects you to do everything online. I like to talk to people. I know I've made a conscious decision. I haven't got a smartphone. I know you can have all these apps on it to do this, that. But whenever you phone a utility or a company, you get this sort of 10-minute automated voice which sort of says, you go to this website, do you want us to send a link, this, that. Now, I just want to talk to somebody.
Yeah.
I find the frustration that is so difficult these days.
Yeah. So a bit of, like, digital exclusion.
Yes.
Kind of.
I know to a certain extent it's me that doesn't want to get on the smartphone bus. But that'd be the same for my mother, you know. I know Rachel would do it all for me, but I shouldn't have to rely on my wife to do that.
Yes, absolutely.
And can I just say that since meeting Lee, it's been an absolute revelation to find out how little the world understands about sight loss. I think everyone makes a conscious effort physical impairments.
Yes.
But they don't consider visual impairments. It's like the lighting in public toilets.
Just stole my thunder there.
You know, it's all supposed to be accessible. And it is if you've got a physical impairment, but the lighting is always crap.
Yeah. Okay.
So, both me and my mum, I don't know what visual impairments we all have. We have retinitis pigmentosa. So the first issue we have is night blindness. So dim light, we can't see a damn thing. In daylight, I can see a bit, asking my mum. But everywhere these days, as an overarching issue, they tend to have sort of energy-saving light bulbs. They all seem to have, you know, it's really dim lighting.
Yes.
You go in somewhere, you can't see a blooming
thing. All the lighting that comes on when you walk in.
Yes.
I'm like, whew, and it blinds you because you go from dark to light.
Yes, and I'll shut up in a minute. So me and my wife were staying in a hotel in York many years ago, and the hotel were telling us that they were really proud of this new accessible room they'd got.
Oh, wheelchair accessible.
You go into the, you know, the bedroom.
Yeah.
You put the light on. And I'm saying to Rachel, are you going to put the light on? It's on, is it?
Mm-hmm.
You go in the bathroom. Okay. You get lovely bright light. It was fine. In the bedroom, put the light on, couldn't see a thing. You're quite right in terms of physical access for wheelchairs, not a problem.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, when we left, it was, well, how did you find the accessible room? It was great if you're in a wheelchair, but if you've got a visual impairment, unless I spent all my time in the bathroom, it was now good to man the beast.
Absolutely. And I think there's, like, a recurring theme that, like, lack of awareness sometimes, whether that's with the drivers on the bus, whether that's with people in hotel establishments, whether it's just the general public in their houses, blocking the streets. I think people, it feels like we've come a really long way over the last 20 years or whatever for wheelchair users, for example. You know, there's a lot of step-free access for people to get grant funding and pots of money to do accessible changes. A lot of the time, the things they tick off are ramps, step-free access, turning circles, you know, things that are very much geared towards physical disabilities. And we're trying really hard. And like I say, I try to manage people's expectations. Rome wasn't built in a day. You know, it doesn't feel like that long ago that women weren't really allowed to vote or work and all that. And, you know, it takes a long time for these things to happen. But when it's you that lives that life, and I am that person professionally as well as personally, it can be really frustrating. But what we want to try and do is continue to have these conversations with the people, the powers that be, so to speak, and the people that make the policies and pass the legal legislations and all of that kind of stuff to make sure that when they are ticking the accessibility sheet, so to speak, that lighting and contrast is permanently included in that list. Thank you for sharing that with
us.
No, the lovely lady in green shall remain nameless.
Linda.
Do you want to have your say?
No, I'm okay.
You're okay? The lady in black and white doesn't want to speak. What's your name?
Heather.
No worries. Do you want to say anything, sir?
Yeah.
Do you want to hold this microphone so that Ray can hear you?
Yeah. But driving buses is even a nightmare sometimes.
So you struggle with buses?
They stop sometimes, a big gap with the pavement and the bus.
Right, OK. So when you're getting on and off the bus?
Yeah, sometimes. But there's diamond buses.
The what, sorry?
Diamond buses. In the worst.
Let's lock down.
Diamond buses.
What did you
do? Diamond
buses. Oh, diamond buses, sorry.
Big gap in the middle. Step down. Go on the road, they go on a pavement again. It's not moving.
So, but accessing buses, you think, is the biggest challenge that you have, and particularly diamond ones.
Yeah, well, that best window's okay.
Okay, no worries, we can reach out to
you. Not to get on it, I can help you.
You try not to get on?
Diamond bus, no.
Okay, no worries, thank you for sharing.
I don't give you time to sit down.
They don't give you time to sit down?
No.
I would say on the side of access to getting on off buses and help, that has improved over the past, I don't know how many years, 5-10 years.
That's good to hear.
I believe some training has been put in place.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I can see evidence of that because drivers now are much more likely to respond when I ask what the number of the bus is and where it's going. The built environment, and well, it overlaps for me with the issue of abuse of pavements, e-scooters, delivery bikes, mm-hmm. electric bikes now, and the unregulated, unlicensed ones can go at 70 miles an hour or more. I believe the police are taking to using them now to catch them, which is interesting. I sometimes think we're the forgotten impairment, because the disability movement, bless it, going back 30 years or more, they concentrated on what were very obvious things, wheelchair access, toilets, and thank God there are more accessible toilets now. I'd had the same problem as people of poor lighting until I had a marvellous cataract surgery. I will say, with communication with the health service, I have started getting letters in PDF form which are accessible. I have to load them onto my computer to do it, because I'm a bit of a smartphone dinosaur. I dislike the things. I have one that's partially adapted accessible, but I hate the idea of trying to arrange appointments, fill forms in on a touch screen. One thing I would say is that when I had an appointment recently and I had a dressing, and the person in the room summarised it quite well, but handed out the standard print thing with phone numbers which were penned in, so it's unlikely it would have scanned successfully or very easily. But how nice it would have been, harking back to the days of the old Nokia phones. Does anyone remember them? What those phones had was a thing, send a business card. It would send a number and details that people chose to send to you. You received it and you could add it automatically to your address book. Mm-hmm. Now, as far as I know, and it may be that I'm grossly ignorant, I don't know of smartphones that are able to do that. There may be an app. There may be an app, but I don't know if there is in the Apple or Android world.
Yeah,
but
you can still do that, right?
You can, can't.
Yes.
You?
Yes.
I ought to know about that. To finish up with, we've mentioned transport and the environment with e-bikes and the like. Whenever I'm on Broad Street, which is the main thoroughfare going out to West Birmingham, whenever I come out of a pub, which is very often these days because I don't drink much now, or a shop, I try, with my very limited sight, to look both ways as if I'm stepping into the road, because the pavements, like it or not, have become part of the road. And you just can't step out thoughtlessly, because these people, some of them are thoughtless.
Mm-hmm.
There are some of them who are more considerate, but there's a lot of people who seem to have the attitude of, do as you damn well please you.
Yeah.
And we do really don't care. And I haven't heard them say yet, well, you shouldn't be out, waiting for somebody to say that. I hope the sight loss councils might actually communicate more and have decided that it's worth their while to have spots on the talking newspapers. We would dearly like to attract a younger listenership. Many of our listeners are older even than me. We want to attract people certainly below 60, 50, 40. But I hope the SLCs will try and forge closer links with the local TNs.
Absolutely. So just in the concept of tight, like, yeah. We can absolutely take this offline, but we do work. We're in the process of doing quite a big piece of work with Birmingham Talking Newspaper. We are always happy to be interviewed, share content, share whatever it is. We, at the end of the day, like, sight loss councils aren't here to step on anyone's toes, steal any work, steal any people. Like, we want to raise awareness. I think for me, I never met another blind person, so I'm reluctantly going to share my age with you now. So I was 40 a few weeks ago. And I'd never met another... I don't know, I feel a bit old. But I never met another blind or partially sighted person until I was 30. Like, I lived in a sighted world. I went to mainstream school. I struggled on my own to fit in, to blend in, to not be quote-unquote that blind girl or that blind woman. And I think it's because the world has such misunderstood stereotypes of what blind and partially sighted people can and can't do, or should and shouldn't do. And I think
our purpose as Thomas Pocklington Trust as a whole, but absolutely as sight loss councils in the local communities, is to work together with organisations, with groups of people, to try and squash those misconceptions and show people that we are funny, we do have a social life, we can go to work, we do have families, but there are challenges that we have, and they can help us to overcome them by making really small changes. And we'll go on to some of those in a second.
And we may return for a final piece from that session in a couple of weeks' time after we've taken our break. More about that a bit later on. This morning, though, on the radio, there was a short item on the Today programme about pavement parking, which, of course, is a hazard to us and many disabled and other people as well. But I thought that you might like to hear one of the Sight Loss Council YouTube videos about what the Sight Loss Councils do about trying to make the spaces we all use a bit less hazardous.
My name's Kelly Barton. I work for a national sight loss charity called Thomas Pocklington Trust. In our engagement team, we have a brand called Sight Loss Council. So there's about 20 sight loss councils up and down the country, and they're all made up of blind and partially sighted volunteers who are working towards making positive change in their local area. So trying to make organisations and services more inclusive and accessible for people who've got sight loss. So we've been working with Sefton Council. We invite people to come in and we talk to them about the challenges and the barriers that people who are blind and partially sighted face. And then we basically get them to put on simulation glasses which simulate different eye conditions. And they then go in pairs and they walk outside. So we go on sort of an hour's walk with them in the local area so that they can understand the challenges that we face when we're out and about, you know, as people who've got sight loss. So things like uneven pavements, overhanging bushes, just the general difficulties on the street, things like pavement parking, when you've got cafes that come quite far out into the street with street furniture. We've done three of these sessions, and we've had people from the highways team, public protection, people who are kind of involved in street design, just to help them have a better understanding of the challenges that we face, but also where areas are possible, you know, where it works well. So streets where actually this is a good way for it to be. So we try and bring the positives as well for people so that we can highlight to them good practice as well as, you know, what could do to be improved and what would help us as people who can't see when they're trying to navigate the area with using a long cane or a guide dog.
Well, I got involved with the Sight Loss Council about 18 months ago. It gives me an opportunity to make a difference. So attending meetings like today, getting involved with transport planning and educating people and informing people as to how we want to be treated by society at large. Last Tuesday I was walking up South Road in Waterloo, and there's temporary fencing outside icing, if you know there, it's by Waterloo Station. And because you had the rails near the crossing, it was just not possible to walk into the road and do anything. You have to do a massive detour, and you mean crossing a potentially dangerous road. Now, I know work has to happen, but it can be frustrating. That's just one recent example.
I think the fact that we've had almost 60 people on these courses now, so I think that's really positive. And in November, we're going to do a reflection session, so some people are going to come back and tell us what they've changed within their job roles, because that's really important to us. So it's all very well delivering sessions like this, but what we want to do is to see, you know, what impact that's having and how people are changing their practice within their job role to make to make it a better experience for people who are blind or partially sighted.
Thomas Pocklington Trust and Sight Loss Council's logos. Sefton Council logo. www.sefton.gov.uk.
Welcome to your latest audio information from Samwell Visually Impaired. This audio of SVI's activities looks forward to what's coming up in August through to September. First, a diary of one-off activities put on by SVI. There will be more information about the seaside trip and the visit to Wolverhampton Grand Theatre in the next few weeks. We end with a list of regular activities put on by SVI and information about getting in touch with us.
Wonder in Nature, Nature Connection activities. Our next walk is at West Smethwick Park on Monday the 3rd of August from 1:30 p.m. Tea and Toast, the first Wednesday of the month, 10:30 a.m. to 12 noon SVI offices. On the 5th of August, we are pleased to welcome guest speaker Chantelle Richards from the Black Country Living Museum. Save SVI, write to your local councillor. On Wednesday the 5th of August, 10:30 a.m. to 3:30 p.m. SVI offices. Social night out at the Tividale, Friday the 7th of August from 7 p.m. Socialise trip to the seaside on Wednesday the 12th of August. The details of this trip are still to be confirmed. Women's group Coventry Jaunt on Wednesday the 9th of September. Let's talk about IT, Monday the 14th of September from 12:30 p.m. to 2:30 p.m. SVI office. Barry Lane, IT whiz from Beacon, will be with us, so let us know in advance if there is anything in particular you'd like him to help you with. The Magic of Motown, Wolverhampton Grand Theatre, Thursday the 17th of September at 7:30 p.m. Get ready for all the hits, glittering costumes, dazzling dance routines and outstanding musicianship in this breathtaking live concert spectacular. Reach out and show you that there ain't no mountain high enough with the biggest Motown party of the year. Dear SVI members and friends, wow, what a scorcher of a summer so far. Below are our late summer activities. Let's hope the sun shines on us, but not quite so hot that we can't enjoy ourselves. Please book quickly, as some activities will be very popular. Wonder in Nature, Nature Connection activities. Our next walk is at West Smethwick Park on Monday the 3rd of August from 1:30 p.m. Sessions are once a month until October. Sophie from Wonder in Nature will guide you in gentle, mindful walks. These sessions will offer a chance to slow down and connect more deeply with nature and each other. Our August session will focus on tasting, and we encourage you to bring items for a little sharing taster picnic. Refreshments will also be available to buy from the West Smethwick Park Pavilion Cafe. Meet by the pavilion at 1:30 p.m. For anyone travelling by taxi, let the office know so that someone can meet you at the car park. Join Sophie at Oak House on Monday the 7th of September at 1:30 p.m. for Nature Connection through the senses, tuning into sound. Enjoy a peaceful session in the gardens, listening to nature with meditation and sound bath instruments. We'll also commemorate the project by planting a blackcurrant bush beside a garden bench, a lasting space to enjoy throughout the seasons and help feed the local birds. Let us know you're coming. You can either meet at the SVI office at 1:30 p.m. or at the Oak House gates at 2 p.m. Tea and Toast, the first Wednesday of the month, 10:30 a.m. to 12 noon at the SVI offices. Come along for tea, toast and a chat with SVI friends. On the 5th of August, we are pleased to welcome guest speaker Chantelle Richards from the Black Country Living Museum. She wants our thoughts on their audio-described tours and how they can encourage more people to go on them. The September Tea and Toast will be on Wednesday the 2nd. Guest speaker to be confirmed. Save SVI. Write to your local councillor. On Wednesday the 5th of August, 10:30 a.m. to 3:30 p.m. at the SVI offices. Would you like to write to your local councillor about the proposed changes to SVI but need support using email? Volunteer Sarah Ann is coming to SVI on Wednesday the 5th of August to support members to do this. You will need to make a private appointment in advance so that we can be sure to help as many people as possible. Sarah Ann will fill in our councillor letter template with you and add your name and address. Use your postcode to find your local councillor and their email address. Help you add a short paragraph explaining how SVI supports you and what the impact would be if SVI services were no longer available. And email the completed letter to your local councillor on your behalf. Social night out at the Tividale, Friday the 7th of August from 7 p.m. Following the success of our women's group nights out, where we can't seem to keep the men away, we have decided to hold some joint evening socials for everyone. Our first night will be at the Tividale, 46 to 47 Regent Road, Tividale, Albury, B69 1TL. Join us to enjoy real ales, good wines and a fantastic range of gins. Let us know you are coming and we can pre-book tasty crusty cobs to satisfy your hunger pangs. Socialise trip to the seaside on Wednesday the 12th of August. The details of this trip are still to be confirmed. So if you're interested in going to the seaside, please do contact us at the office and give us your thoughts on destination. Men's group, Wednesday the 19th of August, 10:30 a.m. to midday at the SVI office. Come along for a relaxed morning of good company, conversation and a laugh. Whether you fancy a chat, a game of accessible dominoes or simply catching up with others, all men are welcome. We're also keen to hear your ideas for future activities, outings and places to visit, so come and help shape the group. Women's group Coventry Jaunt on Wednesday the 9th of September. Women of SVI, join us as we travel on the train to Coventry. Meeting at Sandwell and Dudley train station at 10 a.m, we'll visit the old and new cathedrals where we'll learn of their history and the devastating damage done during the wartime blitz. Afterwards, we will browse the shops, stopping for lunch before our train journey home. The trip is free, but please remember to bring your travel passes for the train. Let the office know you are coming so that we can meet you at the station and help us to know how many sighted guides are needed. Let's talk about IT, Monday the 14th of September from 12:30 p.m. to 2:30 p.m. at the SVI office. Following our August Let's Talk About IT break, we are pleased to invite you to come along to join us for an informal session where we'll chat about all things IT. Whether you're a tech whiz or just getting started, everyone's welcome. Barry Lane, IT whiz from Beacon, will be with us, so let us know in advance if there is anything in particular you'd like him to help you with. Contact the SVI office to book your place. The Magic of Motown, Wolverhampton Grand Theatre, Thursday the 17th of September at 7:30 p.m. Get ready for all the hits, glittering costumes, dazzling dance routines and outstanding musicianship in this breathtaking live concert spectacular. Come celebrate as we reach out and show you that there ain't no mountain high enough with the biggest Motown party of the year. Meet beforehand at the Moon Underwater pub opposite the theatre. We are still negotiating ticket cost and pre-show touch tour. Please contact the office to book or register your interest. SVI Rocks next session on Wednesday the 30th of September from 10 a.m. to 12 noon. Join Rodrigo and Sarah Ann for our popular SVI Rocks sessions in the SVI Common Room. Sing or bring along an instrument and make some noise with us. Boost your musical skills and confidence. Contact us to book your place. Supported gym sessions every Tuesday, 10 a.m. to 12 noon at the Portway Lifestyle Centre. Break a sweat and boost your energy with fellow SVI members. From treadmills and bikes to weights, there's something for everyone and plenty of support to help you along the way. It's a fun social way to stay fit and active all year round, rain or shine. Line dancing every Tuesday 1 p.m. to 2:30 p.m. at the Dartmouth Central Club. Put on your dancing shoes and join Ray and Jean for a lively line dancing session full of fun and feel-good moves. Whether you're looking to stay active, improve your balance or simply meet new people, this is the perfect chance. Absolute beginners are welcome. Just come along and enjoy. We'd love to see you on the dance floor. Showdown every Tuesday afternoon at 2 p.m. and Thursday morning 10 a.m. to 12 noon at the Portway Lifestyle Centre. Following the success of our team's first competition experience, we are holding more showdown sessions. Come and join us for this fast-moving interactive sport similar to table tennis and air hockey, designed for blind and visually impaired people, but anyone can play. Contact the SVI office for more information. Dartmouth Park Walk every Thursday, weather permitting, from 12 noon to 2:30 p.m. Walks will take place each week. Meet us by the Dartmouth Park War Memorial, from where we will take a leisurely walk around the park and Sandwell Valley, stopping off for refreshments. Please tell us you are coming so we can make sure we have enough sighted guides. Booking and payments. All activities must be booked in advance. Spaces fill up fast. Call 0121 525 4810 or email info@sandwellvisuallyimpaired.org.uk to reserve your spot. We can now take card payments in person or over the phone. You can also pay by bank transfer or cash. Just get in touch and we'll help you with the details. We look forward to seeing you at one or more of our upcoming events. Best wishes, the SVI team. Sandwell Visually Impaired CIO, SVI Office, West Bromwich Town Hall, Lodge Road, West Bromwich, B78DY. Office telephone number 0121 525 4810. Email info@sandwellvisuallyimpaired.org.uk. Website www.sandwellvisuallyimpaired.org.uk.
Remember, you can keep up week by week with what's happening with SVI and their activities by getting the Sandwell Talking News by post, or listening to us on the internet, or subscribing to our podcast. And that, of course, was the latest activities letter, which will be winging its way to CD listeners through the post in the next few days. It may be available as a podcast, I'm not sure of that. Time in a moment for a round of thanks. I must, before I forget, thank Pocklington Trust for permission to use their YouTube videos. I've got a few more lined up. They do quite a few videos to do with accessible environments, general eye health, and a lot on education and higher education. So if you've got access to YouTube, a search will bring up all those podcasts. Now, before the current round of thanks to our readers, I must apologise for not thanking our readers last week. As far as I recall, they were James, Debbie, Lauren, and her partner put in an appearance as well in Friday's reading. Sargent, Jenny, who did the article about the King's Winford Gentlemen Songsters, and we ended up with Kate doing Tuesday's news. And for this week, we have to thank, in order, Mia, Jan, Rachel, Linda, Janet and Trevor. Thanks to them and everybody in the background, Pam, of course, who you've heard a lot of just now with the latest activities newsletter, and Tony doing the dispatch along with Gavin at the Town Hall. Sue picks all the items from the Express and Star. And that's how the whole thing comes together. But I'll be off up north for a visit to some friends I've known for a long time. Don't suppose I'll bump into the ex-King of Manchester, the Prime Minister Andy Burnham, as I'll be getting onto the tram network there. And thankfully, the trams are running on the line I'll be using. But I always enjoy going up to the northwest, in spite of what Donald Trump said about it, that little old town in the northwest. Right, that's it then for this week. I look forward to being back with you in a couple of weeks' time. Hope the weather isn't quite so scorchingly hot in the next week or two. And I hope when I do return, I'll be able to get in on one or two of those activities Pam was just telling us about. In the meantime, it's this week's In Touch for postal listeners. We'll be back with you in the first or second week of August. Take care in the meantime. We're all looking forward to being back with you in a week or two's time. Bye bye for now.
T
To use our talk phone service to listen to Sandwell Talking News or leave us a message, phone 0121 699 6696. If you are using a landline in the 0121 area, then just dial 699 6696.